Friday, May 12th, 2006. You're listening to Brian Madden Live. Today's show is a recording of a speech I gave yesterday afternoon at the Ronald Reagan Building in downtown Washington, D.C. This speech was part of Accelera Solutions, a local Citrix Platinum Partners afternoon server-based computing event. My talk was focusing on the future of Citrix and Microsoft, including how Citrix got to where they are today, where they're going to be going moving forward, what they're going to do in a Microsoft Longhorn world, and how Citrix's acquisition of Net6, Netscaler, Taros, and now Reflectant is going to play into the future of their vision. So my name is Brian Madden, and I am sort of an independent technology analyst that tracks the Citrix and server-based computing industry. And so we heard Joe talk about Citrix and kind of what Citrix is doing with their entire access suite, in terms of they have this advanced access control and access gateway and now PS4 and all these kinds of things. So to me, what's most interesting is to look at why Citrix is doing this and how these products actually work together, and maybe most importantly, how this stuff compares to what Microsoft is doing. Because let me ask you, has anyone ever had the conversation, either the thought yourself or your boss asked you, why are we using Citrix? Because it costs $400 per user, terminal server is free, and so why are we spending all this money on Citrix? Is this something that any of you have thought about before? No? Geez, you guys are great, you have a great sales position. I mean, I think about this because I work with Citrix every day. This is all I do, is tracking this industry. And so it's interesting, for those of us who've been around for a while in this industry, you know, Citrix had their own products, that their old WinFrame product, they licensed the code from Microsoft, and then Microsoft made Terminal Server, and everyone was like, wow, Citrix is dead, because everyone's going to use Terminal Server for everything. And of course, what Microsoft did was they just built the very core kind of baseline functionality into the Terminal Server product, and then Citrix had their MetaFrame add-on product. And remember in the days of the very first version of Terminal Server, Windows NT Terminal Server Edition from 1998, it really was very baseline. There was no one saying, why do I need Citrix? You could not use just plain Terminal Server. Well, in the years that have gone on, you know, that was Service Pack 4 came out for Terminal Server and had more functionality than Windows 2000 and 2003 and 2003 Service Pack 1. With every version of Windows that comes out, Microsoft adds more and more functionality into the core Terminal Server product. So in fact, if you look back to the Citrix marketing slides from 1998, you'll see, why should you use Citrix? You have better colors, more resolution, printer redirection, clipboard redirection, audio redirection, shadowing, all these functionalities. Well, guess what? I mean, Terminal Server does all this today. So in the day, you had Citrix with this, and Terminal Server is kind of moving up into these things. And so is Citrix dead today? Well, of course not. Why are people using Citrix today? Well, web interface, right? It's very nice to just point users to websites. They connect, installs the client automatically. The whole concept of application publishing, where I say, just connect me to Word, and let the system figure out in the back end what server it's running on and what's available and all this kind of stuff. Seamless Windows. Of course, yes, I can connect to a single application on a terminal server, but when I do that, then I'm going to have that application sort of stuck in a fixed size window. And if I maximize it, my application doesn't change shape, it just, my application stays the same size, and I get a black background. So I cannot resize my applications dynamically with pure terminal server. This whole Citrix Secure Gateway kind of thing, if I have 10 servers, and I want to provide those servers to my users outside of my firewall, if I'm using pure terminal server, I need to open up 10 holes in my firewall, and one to each server. And if I want to use SSL, which I can use SSL with terminal server, that was a new feature that Microsoft added to the Service Pack 1 functionality for Windows 2003, but I have to have an SSL certificate for every single terminal server in my environment. So these are the things why people today are using Citrix. Well, I don't know if anyone here has seen the feature list for Microsoft's Longhorn server. And you know the name Longhorn, the next version of Windows. Of course, there's Windows Vista, which is the Longhorn client software. Vista will be the name that you buy when you go to Best Buy to buy the product. But the server name has not yet been revealed. So the term Longhorn still applies. It's just that's talking about the server side of things. So So Longhorn Server, have you seen the feature list for the terminal services on Longhorn Server? Microsoft is building in seamless Windows to Longhorn Server. Microsoft is building in application publishing to Longhorn Server. Microsoft is building in a single terminal server gateway, which is almost exactly like Citrix's secure gateway. Microsoft is building in a web portal that you can use to connect into your environments. And so a lot of these core features that are why people use Citrix today are being built right into the Longhorn product. And this, by the way, this is not like I'm saying some rumor, maybe it will happen, maybe it will not happen. This is fact. You can go up to Microsoft's websites and see demonstrations of how the application publishing works and the gateway and stuff. So again, this is not like, oh, it's a rumor and trying to, you know, start trouble or whatever. I mean, this is happening. Now, when's Longhorn Server going to see the light of day? We're probably looking 2007, 2008, because, you know, Vista's been pushed back to 2007 now, and probably Longhorn Server will be a year behind that. So this is a couple years in the future. But this is something Citrix has to think about, because everything that Microsoft is building into Longhorn Server from the terminal server standpoint is exactly a lot of the value that Citrix adds today. Now, of course, Microsoft has been working on Longhorn Server for a long time. So this is no surprise to Citrix. And so Citrix, I think probably everyone here uses Citrix primarily for presentation server. Is that a fair statement? The metaframe, the presentation server. Yes, there are these other products, Password Manager and their advanced access controls, but that's probably not too many people really using that. A lot of people know Citrix as presentation server, and certainly presentation server is the lion's share of Citrix's revenue on a yearly basis. Well, Citrix recognized that they have a risk being a one-product company. Just like any single product company has a risk. I mean, anyone that does this kind of stuff has the risk that Microsoft could add that functionality into the base product for free, and then they would be scrambling for business plan. Look at what they've done to Office vendors, antivirus, I mean, Portal, all this kind of stuff. Microsoft is really good at adding functionality to baseline Windows that's not good enough to really use, but just good enough to piss off the companies they're competing against. And so, of course, Citrix is no different in this particular case. So a few years ago, I want to say 2004, is about the time when Citrix announced this access strategy, like that big circle that says access in it, and they said, we are your access infrastructure and we'll help you provide access to applications. And like, in a lot of ways, sure, that's standard marketing bullshit, but at the same time, it's a good message. I mean, where we will manage how you access your applications and make sure you're secure and make sure you can get everything from wherever you are, that's cool stuff, even though it's wrapped up in a cheesy message. Well, thing is, so this is a few years ago that Citrix started announcing this access strategy kind of stuff. So as I said, the message was rock solid, but the products they had didn't really jive with the message. Because around this time, remember Citrix bought a company called Sequoia, which is where a lot, you know, some previous Celeris Solutions people came from. Sequoia is based up in Columbia, Maryland. Sequoia was a web portal company. Had nothing to do with Citrix, nothing to do with whatever. They were a web portal company. In 2001, when Citrix bought Sequoia, was it 2001 or 2000?
2001.
That was a web portal world we were living on. Everyone's going to have a portal, you got to have this, you got to have that. And so Citrix buys this portal company, which is fine. I mean, it had nothing to do with presentation server, but whatever. And they said, well, you know, this portal is part of our access strategy because, you know, to get access to your applications, you need a portal, man. Don't you understand? A portal to access them. And we're all like, yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, I'm going to still use presentation server if that's cool, but your portal, that's fine. Same thing happened with this Password Manager product that Joe was talking about. Citrix didn't write Password Manager. They licensed it from a company called Passlogix. Now, the Passlogix single sign-on Password Manager product, Citrix heavily modified it to make it work in presentation server environment, to make it tie in with the rest of our suite and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's just a password stuffing product. And so the thing is, Citrix is saying, well, as part of our access suite, you know, we are the access company, right? So for you to access your applications, you got to know your password, right? And we're like, yeah. I said, so now we're going to help you do that. And all of us were thinking, that's cool. But you know what? This single sign-on, not my department. We're a big company. I'm dealing with presentation server with Metaframe right now. And whether we use single sign-on or not is great, but you know what? That's like two cubicles over. Talk to that guy. And of course, you talk to that guy, and it's going to say, Citrus, what? I don't... Yeah, we already have this from some other company, so whatever. So around this time also, you know, life moves forward. And so Citrix, you know, they announced their Access Suite, which, as I said, is a combination of the old Metaframe product, plus this password management product, plus this portal product. And as I said, all of us, you know, Citrix could kind of sort of justify how, like, you needed all the products in this suite in order to get a, quote, full access solution. But we were all kind of like, you know what, whatever. We're just going to buy Metaframe. And it's funny because a lot of the licenses that Citrix sold of these other products were ones in their enterprise agreements. Because the core Metaframe product cost in the $300 to $400 per user range. And then the suite took you up in the $600 per user range. Of course, there's discounts and volume incentives and things like that. So, but you're previously, before the suite existed, the enterprise customers and enterprise agreements were buying just Metaframe for the whole enterprise. And now Citrix is saying, okay, well, you know what? We're not going to sell you. If you're buying a big enterprise agreement, we're going to sell you the whole suite, not just Metaframe. Which means the price jumps from $400 per user to $600 per user. And the people, the customers were like, yeah, you know what? Not going to fly here. So you either give me the new version of Metaframe or else I'll do something else. And so Citrix was like, how about if we give you the whole suite for just the price of Metaframe? And people were like, you know what, whatever. If that's what it takes to get my enterprise agreement, that's fine. And so Citrix sold a lot of copies of these other products because they kind of came along free with other versions. And so it's interesting because, again, I said that the Citrix Access Suite, it was a suite in name only. Now, we can't fault Citrix for trying because they had to do something. Because God knows that Microsoft in an instant could release all this functionality to add onto Terminal Server, and then Citrix would be really caught in a bad spot. So they started kind of branching out into these suite type areas, but again, it was not really integrated. It was, they all had separate management consoles, they all were licensed separately, they were really not related at all, except they all had the same sticker on them and they had the same SKU. But apart from that, they were different products. So this was around the 2002, 2003 timeframe, and you know, a lot of people sort of made fun of Citrix about like, well, who knows what their clue is, but for now, Metaframe's awesome. I mean, there's no doubt about that, you know. Metaframe rocks, and this other stuff, we'll endure it if we have to get Metaframe. So fast forward a couple years into the year 2004. Now, what happens in the year 2004, this is when these SSL VPNs become very, very popular. And as Joe mentioned in his presentation, you know, it's funny because an SSL VPN is really no different than an IPsec VPN. It's just that the only difference is the actual encryption protocol that happens to be used. IPsec obviously uses that IPsec and can use whatever port it wants. SSL, a VPN, is going to use SSL as its encryption protocol, and it's going to happen on port 443. The only reason the SSL VPNs are cooler than IPsec VPNs is just because SSL is more universally recognized and goes through all firewalls. And so you don't have these hotels trying to, you know, limit our access and things like this. Now, it's funny because a lot of these SSL VPNs kind of coincidentally happen to be easier to use. This is another thing that Joe mentioned where, you know, your traditional IPsec VPNs are, you've got client-side software that has to be installed. It installs a virtual network adapter. And that's, again, because of sort of the differences between the IPsec and the SSL protocols as far as encryption, because they're encrypting in different layers in the OSI stack. But it's one of these things that the SSL VPNs themselves are not fundamentally different than other VPNs. It's just that they were able to use them over any connection. So SSL VPNs started to get very, very popular. And it's funny, companies like Cisco invented, I mean, who knows how many millions and millions and millions of dollars in IPsec VPN research. And once SSL VPNs got pretty popular in the 2004 timeframe, Cisco released a software patch for their VPNs to turn them into SSL VPNs. Has anyone ever used these from Cisco? He says he's talking to his engineers. Ask him about numbers of concurrent users. Har har. Because what happens on these SSL VPN, or pardon me, these Cisco IPsec VPNs, these are done at the microchip, the ASIC. You know, Cisco has custom chips for doing hardware offloading of IPsec encryption and decryption. well, when you apply the SSL upgrade to these devices, you're basically disabling that chip right there, shutting it off, and doing it all in software. So these concentrators that are getting, you know, 5,000 concurrent IPsec tunnels are dropping to like 200 or 100. Whoops. I mean, it's just, and that's just because I should say, Cisco, of course, I mean, it's been 2 years now since the SSL VPNs have been out, and they've got more products that can do that. But if you take an old IPsec VPN and just try and do a software upgrade, you're not going to see nearly the throughput. But anyway, so like I said, the year 2004 is a very big year for SSL VPNs, and people realize, hey, cool, I can use SSL and get all the same benefits of my VPN as before, not quite the same complexity from the client side, better network firewall traversal, and that's cool. So the rumor starts that Citrix is going to buy an SSL VPN, or an SSL VPN vendor. And it's actually interesting because Citrix's CSG product, Citrix Secure Gateway, that is an SSL VPN. A lot of us in our space, we have been using SSL VPNs for 5 years, or 7 years now, I guess. Wow. It's just that CSG is very limited in that it only supported the ICA protocol, or HTTP if you're using MSAM. But it was an SSL VPN. It was just purpose-built. So the rumor was that Citrix was looking at a company to, you know, they wanted to buy an SSL VPN company. So the company they purchased was Net6. And this is on, you know, November of 2004, they buy the company called Net6. As it so happens, Net6's company colors were also red, so the only thing they had to change in the appliance was the sticker that said, you know, peel off the Net6 sticker, stick on a Citrix sticker, get it out the door, and off you go. And so Net6, it was interesting because whether Citrix did this on purpose or not, who knows? But Net6, coincidentally, just had a total kick-ass SSL VPN. And so Citrix talks about how their SSL VPN is the most popular SSL VPN that's out there. That's true in terms of units sold, because I think in like 2005 they've ended up selling over 6,000 of these devices, which is the most. I mean, that's, and these are independent numbers. You know, this is not from Citrix. You can go to like Gartner or whoever and show, you know, units sold or whatever. Citrix sells more SSL VPNs than anyone else out there. But again, I think that's because Net6 just happened to do a really, really, really good job of building their SSL VPN. And so, notwithstanding anything from Citrix, people would just, they just really liked it. And by the way, WatchGuard makes one of these too. You know, if, I don't know if anyone here uses WatchGuard, maybe your bigger companies, I don't know. But WatchGuard has their own SSL VPN appliance. That's a Citrix Access Gateway also. It just so happens that WatchGuard and Citrix both, well, actually, WatchGuard and Net6 were talking about, you know, where WatchGuard would buy Net6, and then Citrix kind of swooped in there with the bigger check, and off we go. And so, so Citrix's SSL VPN via Net6 technology is actually in several different models from other vendors. But anyway, so Citrix buys this SSL VPN company, and that's cool. But let's think back to kind of how we started this conversation with, well, okay, so Citrix is trying to hedge their bets a little bit about what happens when Microsoft releases terminal services for Longhorn and has all these great functionalities. What's Citrix going to do? And we already kind of said, well, they got this portal, but it's kind of lame. I mean, lame in terms of a portal, or they got the suite, which is kind of lame because it's not really a suite. It's really a portal plus password management plus MetaFrame. So now they're throwing an SSL VPN into the mix. And again, it's like, well, you know what? Like, SSL VPNs are very cool, no doubt. But again, you know what? In my company, I'm the Citrix guy. And so VPNs, that's like Carl, three cubicles over. He's got long hair and wears sandals. He handles our security. And you got to talk to him. And again, so you talk to him, and they don't know who Citrix is. I mean, it's like, well, they're thinking of these big, you know, Netilla and like Neoteris and Juniper and Cisco and Foundry. And all, you know, these are like the SSL VPN vendors out there. And so part of the problem too is Net6 was a startup when Citrix bought them. So Net6 had only sold like 50 of these VPNs appliances worldwide because they had just, like, they were just kind of developing, just rolling up and ramping up the selling of these things. So it really, you know, no one had heard of that. So anyway, so time passes. So now Citrix owns this SSL VPN. They got this portal. They got all this kind of stuff. Citrix released then version 4 of their whole access suite, and they released version 4 of their access suite just over a year ago. And so this now finally integrates password management and their portal and all this kind of stuff into one management console, one licensing console, but it's still separate products. Like, it's, yeah, so it's licensed together and managed together, but it's still kind of unrelated products. And then Citrix, in December, released an update to their Access Suite. And this update they released in December was what was huge. And I don't have, I have a board here, but I don't have any pens for it. So I guess I'll just explain. So Citrix in version 4, pardon me, Citrix in a year ago releases version 4 of their suite, version 4.0. This past December, they upgraded certain components to version 4.2. So the Citrix Access Gateway...
Sharpie?
Nah, forget it. The Citrix Access Gateway of today, or of that day, was Access Gateway CAG version 4.0. They upgraded to version 4.2. And this is where that whole advanced access control and all this kind of stuff comes into play. Because here's what's interesting. The SSL VPN that Citrix bought from Net6, as I said, it's a very good SSL VPN as far as SSL VPNs go. But really, it's no different than the 200 other SSL VPNs that are made from every other vendor that's out there. And so there's nothing special. I mean, like, it won a lot of comparisons and won a lot of awards, but fundamentally, it's an SSL VPN just like everyone else has. Just the fact that Citrix owned them, you know, who cares? Well, what happened, though, is that in December, Citrix releases this version 4.2 upgrade. And this is where Citrix's SSL VPN appliance integrates with your presentation server in a very, very cool way. And I'll talk about this. Everyone probably right now is familiar with policies in presentation server. So you go into the Java-based management console, and you can right-click and use the policies. For those people who are on MetaFrame XP still, you know you configure a policy, and then after you configure the policy object, you have to apply it somewhere. Well, in MetaFrame XP, you can apply that policy to either users or groups. And then PS3 added cool new functionality. They didn't change the way policies worked, per se. They just changed the targets. In PS3, you can apply policies to users and groups, but also based on client IP address or client IP subnet, based on server or server folder, or based on client name, which is very, very cool. So now we can actually have different policies. Like now we could do, for example, if you're connecting from outside the firewall, then drive mapping is disabled. But if you're connecting from inside the firewall, drive mapping is enabled. It's very easy to do that. You configure two different policies, and apply them to different IP subnets for the client IP subnet, and then off you go. So this has nothing to do with advanced access control, nothing at all. This is PS3 that came out now 2 years ago. So on PS3, policies suddenly became more valuable. Not because you could do more with the policies themselves, but because you could apply the policies to more different types of targets. Okay, well, that's 2 years ago, we got all these new policy targets. Well, 1 year ago, with PS4, if anyone's using PS4 currently, you know when you choose to apply policies, same stuff, right? Users, groups, IP subnets, client names, servers and folders, and secret option number 5, which was Smart Access Zone. Now, probably no one knows what the Smart Access Zone is, other than it is like a target against which I can apply the policies I have configured in my presentation server. Let's set that aside for a second and connect back into, we talked about this access gateway. Well, Joe mentioned something called advanced access control. Advanced access control is a product from Citrix. So you know how Citrix does a really good job of coming up with stupid names for features? And so like they've got a feature called, session reliability. But like session reliability, you'll never see session reliability in a configuration tool. It's really using their common gateway protocol and use port 2598 and all this kind of stuff. So the marketing material calls it one thing, and then the technical people call it something else. My point with this is advanced access control is the name of a product from Citrix. So you can log into MyCitrix, you can download it. Advanced access control, it is a web portal, a web application. So much like you go to Microsoft and download SharePoint, and so you build a Windows 2003 server, you install IIS, and then you install SharePoint onto that server, that's what advanced access control is. So you build a Windows 2003 server, you install IIS, you install advanced access control onto that server. So what? Well, what advanced access control is from Citrix, it's a portal product that is designed for figuring out who you are, how you're connecting, and then classifying you appropriately. So advanced access control, it works together in concert with the Citrix Access Gateway, but it does not replace the Citrix Access Gateway. The Citrix Access Gateway is the piece of hardware. That's that appliance that you buy that is your SSL VPN. So so when your users access a website, the Citrix Access Gateway itself is just, as I said, kind of a pass-through thing to authenticate you and, you know, build your SSL tunnel and then pass through some back-end website. Whatever you use once you get through that gateway, well, that's up to you as an administrator to configure it however you want. And so if you're using Citrix's Advanced Access Control, then as I said, this AAC product is a product you install on IIS and it sits behind your access gateway just like any other internal website would. As I said, the two work together, and I'll come back to that. So what's interesting with this is that Citrix's Advanced Access Control has a functionality called Endpoint Analytics. It stands for EPA, Endpoint Analytics. And what this Endpoint Analytics technology does is it has the capability to analyze your client device based on a set of rules and figure out if your client device matches any rules that have been configured. So as an administrator, we can choose to look for things on the client device itself. We can, you know, of course, access in the past has mostly been based on where are you connecting from, like what's your IP address, and what user are you. So user and IP address, that's pretty much the way it's always worked for all these years. With this endpoint analytics that's built into Citrix's Advanced Access Control, we can be very granular and looking for specific things on our client device. So we can look for, did the user two-factor authenticate, or did they single-factor authenticate? Is the user connecting from a device that is managed by our domain? Like, I mean, is it a laptop that belongs to the corporate domain, or is it some random laptop, like their home computer? We can look for any running process or any running service. We can look for files or registry keys. So, for example, we can look for, are you running antivirus software, or are you running antivirus software with the latest signatures? We can look for, I don't know, what else?
Service packs,
yeah. I mean, almost anything you could query, like with like an inventory kind of management tool, you can query with these endpoint analytics. And so what happens is, as an administrator, you use these endpoint analytics as a tool to classify your users. So you create these things called, I just refer to them like as buckets. So you could create like one kind of bucket or classification saying users from outside of our firewall but with a corporate resource. Or you could create a second bucket that said, you know, devices from outside the firewall, not a corporate resource, but that do have the most recent spyware and AV definitions. Or a third bucket that says, you know, users outside of our firewall, no spyware verified, but two-factor authenticated. And you can build as many of these buckets as you want. And essentially, as an administrator, you essentially kind of create scripts for these kinds of things. So what happens is when the user hits the website, well, first thing that happens is when they hit the website, a little package is downloaded and runs to make sure that there is no keyboard scanning, key logging software, anything like that. So make sure the client is clean, first of all, and then it presents them with the authentication box. Then the user logs on, and then it will run sort of like the part two of the scan to make sure everything's good and to make sure that, maybe based on who that user is, there's different scans and that kind of stuff. But anyway, these are scripts that you as an administrator essentially configure to find out as much as you can about this client device. So far, so good, right? Now, again, though, who cares? Because guess what? Every single SSL VPN vendor in the world does this kind of stuff. So far, like, Citrix has nothing special with this. Now, some SSL VPN vendors have more of this functionality than others, but what happens with most SSL VPN vendors, what they do then is, depending on which buckets you're classified into, or who you are, or what scans pass and fail, and this kind of stuff, it will give you access at the network level to different IP addresses, different subnets, and different ports. Because again, this SSL VPN device, this is a networking device. This is not a server thing like in our department. This is a networking appliance. It controls access to the network. That's all it does. And so the way many of these SSL VPN vendors work is perhaps it tries to see, do you have the most recent antivirus software installed? If not, maybe it only gives you access to a VLAN that has only one server on it, which is your McAfee update server. So that you still connect into the same portal, but you can only access the one port, the one IP address of that server, you update your antivirus software, then re-authenticate again, then you get full access to the network. Cool stuff, right? But again, you don't need Citrix for this. I mean, every SSL VPN vendor does this. So again, so what's the deal? Like, so where does Citrix tie into this kind of stuff? Where Citrix ties in to this is taking the two components we talked about and combining them together. So I told you that MetaFrame Presentation Server version 4.0, when you create policies in your presentation server just like you have in the past, when you do that, you apply policies either to group, user, IP, client, server, all the stuff we talked about. But there's that option 5 I mentioned earlier, which is Smart Access Zone. So when you create these policies within Presentation Server, I can actually apply specific Citrix Presentation Server policies to these buckets of users I have identified, to people who are coming in from the outside or coming connecting in through my Advanced Access Control Server and my Access Gateway. What that means is very great. For perfect examples of this, that means that, remember, Citrix policies can control things like which virtual channels are enabled or not enabled. How cool would it be that you can actually have a client device connecting from outside the firewall, and you're not building your drive mapping rules based on where they're connecting from, but rather you're scanning their device. If they have the most recent antivirus software on their laptop, you go ahead and allow them clipboard mapping, and you allow them to access their client drives from within their server session. If they don't have the most recent AV software, that's cool. Still give them access to their application. It's just that we're not going to allow that application to touch their local hard drives or their local system because we don't know what they might have running on it. So these are kinds of things that we can do that, and that's just kind of one anecdotal example. The sky's the limit, really. But this is something you get with Citrix that just flat out does not exist with any other vendor. Because in this case, Citrix owns the SSL VPN and the presentation server. They own both of these layers, so they can integrate these together in very cool ways. And so as I said, when Citrix bought NetSix, there was nothing special. It's just like a regular SSL VPN, you know, nothing special at all. But now they have the two of these, they can tie them together, and as I said, I mean, you can control things like which published applications are available. Maybe you notice with PS4, when you're publishing an application, you know, ordinarily with published applications, it gives you options like color and resolution and what users it's available to and all this kind of stuff. In PS4, there's a new screen in the process of publishing applications with a checkbox that says enable, or I should say control, this application via the Smart Access Zone. And again, these Smart Access Zones are like these buckets that we've configured to classify users as they're coming into our environment. So now I can say, for example, maybe there's a healthcare application that you are only allowed to use if you have two-factor authenticated. And I don't care whether you're connecting from internally, outside, cafe, I don't care where you're connecting from, but I only want you to use this application if you're two-factor authenticated. Then I can create that endpoint analysis rule into my advanced access control component. I can scan for that on your client device to make sure you two-factor authenticate it. And then if so, I hit the web interface and I see that link to that application. If I did not two-factor authenticate, I still see the rest of my applications. I just don't see the specific ones that I accessed. So it's interesting because that's why advanced access control, it does plug into web interface. I told you advanced access control is version 4.2. It requires Citrix Access Gateway version 4.2, which is a free upgrade if you have it currently. It requires web interface 4.2 because PS4 shipped with web interface version 4.1, so this is version 4.2 to tie in. So as I said, it ties into web interface so that when ordinarily you access a web interface server, and it connects back into the backend Citrix servers via XML to enumerate your list of applications. Now it also contacts your backend advanced access control server to make sure that it's showing the users the applications that they are allowed to access. So that's pretty huge. The second thing about advanced access control that's interesting is Citrix actually very quietly a few years ago, and I missed this completely at the time, by the way, Citrix bought a company called Motivus. I don't know if anyone's heard of Motivus or heard of this company. This company called Motivus, they were a software company, a very small company, and they had software that allowed you to edit Office applications through a web interface. Like through, it wasn't Java, it's kind of an ActiveX control kind of thing, and you could edit Office applications through the web. And so the idea with this is, a user could access a website, and then if there was a kiosk or whatever, they did not have like local Word installed on their computer, then they could edit this Word document through the website. Now, that in and of itself is not necessarily interesting. What was cool with this Motivus technology, though, is that their little web editor could also be activated in a read-only mode. So instead of like actually editing the Word document through there, you could see the Word doc, and it had the scroll bars that looked almost like Word, kind of, except it was happening in a browser. And since it was all in a browser and they're at the ActiveX control, if you had the view only, the read only, then you couldn't save it. And it was all their ActiveX control, so they could disable copying out of it, and they could disable you know, all this kind of stuff. So unless you wanted to like take screenshots of the whole document, you couldn't pull the doc out of their system. So it was an interesting technology that had no home, really, with Motivus. So Citrix bought Motivus, and Citrix incorporated this Motivus technology into this advanced access control also. So what happens is that now all these, again, your client device connects and it runs these endpoint analytics, these EPA scans on your client device to figure out what bucket we should classify you into. Well, it's going to provide the advanced access control, as I said, it's a web portal. It will provide you with a list of links to your applications, or excuse me, links to your files. Like it can enumerate shared drives and home drives, kind of sort of like WebDAV. Is anyone here using WebDAV or kind of seen that? You know, WebDAV is basically a web interface to a file share. So it's cool because you don't need to connect via SMB. You can connect over the web, but there's no real permissions kind of there. Like I can't, if I'm using WebDAV, I click on a link to a document, I can right click, save as, and then my document is local, and it's up to me to repost it back to the site, or there's nothing preventing me from emailing it or anything like that. But what happens is this Motivus technology, as I said, fully integrated with this AAC web portal. So now I can actually set up rules and say, okay, well, certain users, again, from certain client devices and certain rules to pass, however I classify them via EPA, maybe I want to give them only read-only access to a document. And so maybe I actually decide that, okay, I analyze the user, and if the situation is right where I give them read-only access, I'm going to give them read-only access via the website, via this Motivus technology, and they can't save the document. Or maybe I give them, maybe I want to have the user be able to edit the document, but I can't trust their local machine enough. I can't verify the antivirus stuff, so I'll have them edit it not locally on their machine, but I'll have them edit it via this ActiveX control within my website. Citrix calls that live edit technology. Or maybe I decide, you know what, I want to give them this document via presentation server, so maybe I launch for them an ICA session that is launched locally, but then the ICA session opens the content from the share that was exposed via the website. Or, of course, maybe I want to give them full access. And again, I just say, you know, you click it and it pops up a box and you can download the Word doc locally and work with it locally and do whatever. But again, how much access I give them between none, read-only, edit through the web, ICA, or full access, I got five granular levels of access I can give. And I can say who gets what access based on these endpoint analytic scans that run. And so this is stuff that no one else in the world can do. I mean, no other technology can do this. And again, the reason Citrix can do this is because they own the delivery of the content to you as far as presentation server and this kind of stuff, as well as they also own the SSL VPN appliance. And so if you look at the other companies who do web portal kind of stuff, like Microsoft and things like this, they don't own the network side of things with the VPN. You look at who Citrix competes against in the SSL VPN space, and it's people like Cisco. Again, they don't own the application side of things. So one of the points I made earlier, I mentioned that with other SSL VPNs, these are network appliances. And so yeah, you could still run these scans of client devices, but at the end of the day, the scan was going to say you can access this network and this IP address and this port, and that's it. It was all kind of IP address / port based access. Whereas with Citrix, of course, that functionality is still built into their SSL VPN, and I can still say, based on what scans run on the client, I can still say, well, you get access to this IP or that or whatever. But also takes it one step further and then can specify specifically what you can do with the content that you are accessing over that specific IP or over that port. So that's good stuff. And that, by the way, so this is, if you look at Citrix moving forward, I mean, this is for sure the direction that they're focusing on with everything. Because once Microsoft releases Longhorn and the version of terminal services that runs on Longhorn, it's not even going to be a concern. The fact that Microsoft is giving application publishing and seamless Windows and web interface, that kind of stuff, that's kind of resetting the baseline of being built into the platform. And now Citrix is really looking forward, moving forward with focusing on kind of the linkage between the users and the data and applications they have to access and who can do what. So this is kind of like where Citrix is evolving. And I promise you, in 5 years, we'll be in the same room. And we'll be talking about the exact same thing, because Microsoft will have their version of advanced access control, and Citrix will be doing something else that who knows. But that's just the game that all the vendors play, the kind of cooperation with, you know, with Microsoft. Question?
Yeah, I have a question for you, too, as far as acquisitions. What do you think about the acquisition of the application firewall product?
Well, let's back up. The question is, what about the acquisition of a company called Teros, which has an application firewall? To answer that question, we have to take a step back and ask about the acquisition of NetScaler. And so, you know, so 2004, Citrix buys Net6, the SSL VPN company. And then in the May of 2005, so a year ago tomorrow, I think, actually, Citrix announced that they had purchased NetScaler. And so I don't know how many people looked at NetScaler. I mean, if we thought that the Net6 stuff was not our job, this NetScaler stuff is, like, really not our job. Cool technology, right? But so not our job. I mean, because NetScaler, these are HTTP, you web-based application accelerators. You've probably all seen the slides. You know who buys NetScaler? eBay, Google. MSN, Google, and tons of porn companies. I'm serious. You know, Citrix mentions all these non-referenceable customers. I mean, everyone knows that drives the technology. I mean, just as far as content and bandwidth and everything. So, I mean, like Playboy, Penthouse, these are all gigantic NetScaler customers. And but NetScaler does tons and tons of stuff for the HTTP bandwidth. I mean, it can do things like multiplexing connections together. Because you know that HTTP is connectionless. So if you access brianmadden.com, there's like probably 15 different graphical elements on that homepage, plus the actual web page itself, right? So that means that there's 16 connections that are connections made, the content delivered, connections closed. Next connection is made, content delivered, connection closed. Well, a lot of times the connection building up and tearing down the connection actually takes more processing power on the server than just sending the data across. So what happens is you drop one of these NetScaler devices in front of your web server, and it sees like 4,700 people at the same time requesting the same like .gif file. It requests it from the server once and caches it there. Maybe only for like 30 seconds it caches it, you know, and then sends it all down. So it kind of offloads the hard work. These can do things like compressing HTTP, SSL encryption. So instead of your web servers, you know, encrypting SSL sessions, this device handles the SSL encryption. So just to kind of offload the work from your web servers. And again, like, this is cool, right? So not related to us, but it's cool. These NetScalers, by the way, start at $50,000 to buy one of them. Oh, I take that back. Citrix announced a small business version. The small business one is $17,500 or two for $30,000. Because you need two of them for redundancy, because if your website's that important to you, you're not going to only put it all through one device. So you're looking at a $30,000 entry point for this kind of thing. Well, now, so we think, like, why is Citrix buying this, like, so not related to presentation server and their other kind of stuff? Well, Citrix wants to look at, we are going to provide secure and managed and performant access to all your applications. In today's world, most applications are Windows applications, and sort of the corporate world, right? Like, of course, Google and Salesforce.com, there's always these anecdotal models of like HTML applications, but like most applications are Windows applications. Now, over time, applications will become more modular and services-oriented, and they'll move more of their back-end data around in XML and then HTTP and this kind of stuff. And that's a whole separate conversation about the future of .NET and all this, you know, sort of thing. So I can see the day where that happens, but for now, it's these apps. What Citrix is saying with the reason Citrix bought NetScaler is so that, okay, you know what, if you've got Windows apps, we help you with presentation server. If you've got web apps, we help you with NetScaler. So today, these are two separate divisions. There's the application management group, which is presentation server within Citrix, and there's the application networking group, which is NetScaler within Citrix. So these are two different divisions within Citrix themselves. But again, 5-10 years, this is going to come more and more together. And so, as I said, as even our kind of Windows applications will become more and more reliant on backend data and web services and all this kind of stuff, NetScaler will fall very smoothly into that. And the applications that are delivered to our devices will be less and less about ICA and more about HTTP, whether that's XML over HTTP or whatever the case may be. So Citrix bought a company called Teros, then T-E-R-O-S. Teros is an application firewall. So Teros really snaps into the NetScaler side of things from Citrix, does not snap into the presentation server. And Teros, it actually looks at all the data going through your NetScaler firewall, or looks at the data going through itself, and make sure that nothing bad is going through there. So, like, you've heard of things like script insertion. Like, there's a search box like an upper right corner of a website, you know, you can like type some like SQL code in there to have it like dump out all the contents of your database. So the people who program that website have to be smart enough to validate that field and all that kind of stuff. Well, if you don't want to do all that kind of work, you can actually buy one of these Terraris firewalls, drop this firewall in front of it, and it watches for all the script insertion, and will just make sure nothing goes away. Terraris does cool things like it knows what a credit card number is. You know, all credit card numbers, like every Visa card in the world starts with 4, right? Every Amex card in the world starts with 3-7. Every MasterCard starts with 5. They're 16 digits long. They've got a checksum at the end. It looks at all the strings and numbers going through there, and will look and see if credit card numbers are coming out of your web server, because that's probably not a good thing. And if it sees that, it'll just drop the packets. So, like, these are the kinds of things that, like, this is kind of cool to hear about this kind of stuff. Again, so not our job, right? But cool stuff. Well, again, as the applications are evolving, this is where Citrix is going to kind of, we'll see eventually we'll get closer and closer and closer until, like, these kinds of technologies are applying to presentation server applications as well as applying to the newer web applications. You know, one of the things that's happening, and this is a whole separate conversation, I don't want to go too far down this path, is, you know, moving forward, if you think about it, a terminal server and a web server are not that fundamentally different. They're really not. Because all that's happening is a terminal server takes Windows applications and segregates the application execution from the user interface. So the application execution happens on the box and the interface is on the client. Now, of course, in the way today's terminal server works, because of the way Windows and Windows applications work, there's like a quasi kind of virtualized user interface on the server that's painted out to a virtual screen buffer, and that is sent down to the client device. But fundamentally, a terminal server allows multiple user sessions to run on one server, and the interface is to be wherever they want. Well, guess what? So does IIS. I mean, if you look at our brianmadden.com website and go to our forum, guess what? That's an application. We've got 100 users using it. The interface is being presented to the user, so you know the code, the running, the posting, the processing, that all happens on the server. It's just shooting down the interface to the client. It just so happens that this interface happens to be HTML code we're sending down, and we're sending the client the raw instructions, and then the client itself renders the screen instead of us, you know, building a whole screen and sending it down to the client. Well, I don't know if anyone here has played around with Vista, the new Windows Vista operating system, and the whole Glass interface. Microsoft has this new window manager in Vista. This is codenamed Avalon, which is called WinFX, like Win, the letter F, the letter X. So WinFX is a whole new user and Windows interface, or window manager interface, for a Windows operating system. And part of WinFX is that applications right now, instead of actually a developer specifying, I want this square to be this big, and this square to be this big, and this one over here, they can actually just describe the interface describe the application's interface to the window manager, and the window manager will paint it on its own. So they say, I need a box that says okay, that's, you know, 2 pixels tall, and I need this and I need that, and it's used this graphic here. And so what Microsoft is doing in Longhorn is they are Microsoft calls the term remoting, like when they make an interface available via the remote terminal services. Microsoft is enabling, quote, remoting of this WinFX layer. So what happens, the way terminal services works today, again, is that the RDP, or if you're using Citrix, the ICA protocol driver, it's just a video card driver. So it's a virtualized video card within your session. The windows are still rendered on your server, and then painted out to this virtual video card, then scraped again, and painted out, sent on your client, and painted on your client. Which is why if you have pink buttons on your client, you still have gray buttons within your session. Well, of course, within the Longhorn terminal services timeframe, Microsoft will enable remoting of this WinFX layer. So if an application has been developed for this new Windows interface, instead of sending all its content out to a virtual display driver and scraping all that on the server, it can take these raw WinFX instruction calls and send those WinFX instruction calls right down to the client device, and then let the client device render the screens instead of the server. Why would anyone want to do that? Number one, more users per server, because you're not spending all the time and effort rendering on the server. Number two, much less network bandwidth. Because think about it, like, what is less bandwidth? An HTML code to draw a screen, or like a photograph, a JPEG of that screen, right? And so less bandwidth. And number three, tighter local integration. So now if I turn on like the Windows Bubbles interface and like pink backgrounds and, you know, pink scroll bars and all that kind of stuff, my remote application will have my local interface, because the remote application is sending just these the behind the scenes code to draw the interface locally. And so in that sense, that's not that different than what a web server is today. Especially since more of our applications are becoming more services oriented and having back-end web services and all this kind of stuff. And so I believe, this is not any kind of inside information at all, this is like my own thought, I believe very strongly that IIS and Terminal Server will merge into one single product at some point in the future. I mean, it has to be, in my mind anyway. So because, again, as we get more towards remoting with internal services, lower level, and taking, you know, Microsoft today could do this at maybe even the GDI level, which is the instructions that generate the code for what's given to the screen. You know, if we can be intelligent and grab these raw instructions and deliver those instructions to the client, and then have the client paint it itself, we get the advantages I mentioned, but as I said, that's no different than IIS. Now, we're still talking about two different classes of applications. But I think given that, that being said, as applications evolve, we'll sort of start to see these coming together. If you want to think about really, really cool stuff, tie it back to what Joe said about this workspace control, or what do I call it? Smooth roaming. Thanks. Smooth roaming. Okay. You know what smooth roaming is today? Remember, stupid Citrix marketing name for a feature that is, you know, you wouldn't think about. You know what smooth roaming is? It's the fact that when you reconnect to a disconnected session, it renegotiates your screen resolution and your color depth. That's it. Because previously, if you left the session running on one client device and then walked over to another client device, or if you disconnected, if your new client device could not support the color depth of that old device, you would not get that session. You start a new session. Or if the resolutions didn't match, you would either get a tiny session in a huge window, or a huge session with scroll bars in a tiny window. And so starting in PS3 2 years ago, and now go PS4 and forward, they make it that even when you reconnect to disconnected applications, it renegotiates the parameters of your client device and displays that application to you intelligently. So that's cool, that's there today, great functionality. Thinking of that moving forward, combined with everything we just said about the WinFX remoting and all this kind of stuff, now we can do the exact same kind of thing. So I connect from a client device. Let's say I have a WinFX compatible client device, which is your Windows Vista desktop workstation, or the Vista Snap-in, because Microsoft is going to make this new glass interface available on Windows XP as well. So if I have an XP workstation with WinFX or a Vista workstation, then the server can recognize, oh, you know what, this person, I can go ahead and send them these WinFX primitives behind the scenes and let them render it there locally. And that's cool. And then I grab my Trio, which now runs Windows, runs Program Neighborhood, all this kind of stuff, and pop on the train and connect them via my Trio, because this is broadband. I mean, this is insane, these things now. You know what I mean? It's all broadband. It's Windows. It's 400 megahertz processors. Connect back into my Citrix application. Now it's going to realize, hey, you know what? This person's reconnecting. Not only are we renegotiating the size and the resolution, but also that device cannot support WinFX remoting. So let's go ahead and re-enable that virtual frame buffer on the server. Go ahead and paint the windows with to a virtual display driver on the server, screen scrape, and send the pixels down to the client device. I connect my client device at home. It's a Macintosh. Again, you know what? That Mac computer cannot run these WinFX primitives, so that's fine. And so it screen scrapes and sends it down the old-fashioned way. As soon as I get back to work the next day, connect back into my disconnected sessions and pull them with me, it will recognize, aha, now I'm back on a device that can support it, and it will not only change the resolution and colors, but also stop rendering the screen scrapes on the server and send down the raw instructions to the client where it can be rendered on the client. And so what we're going to see also, if you want to take that even one more step further, is have everyone used Pocket Outlook or Pocket Word or Pocket whatever? They forget about performance. The interface of those is really good, because Microsoft recognizes that they only have 240 by 240 pixels to work with. So they basically rewrote Outlook and made Outlook work for a 240 by 240 screen. Fine. So I said I can use Citrix on this thing, right? And I can connect to Outlook on this thing. It works fine, except no one in the Office division had ever imagined Outlook be working on a 240 by 240 screen. So I either get tiny crunched window where Outlook becomes inoperable, or the scroll bars to scroll it around, or there's a zoom mode where you can zoom it out. So I see Outlook full screen here, but there's half a pixel for each letter, so it doesn't really, not super effective. Yeah, I got the email, I don't know what, I didn't read it, I don't know. So, but the thing is, I think we're going to see the day where Pocket Outlook goes away. Because in the new world, for these new applications that are written for this WinFX kind of Longhorn Glass interface, the applications themselves, as I said, it's not about pixels anymore. It's a fundamentally new way of writing applications as far as the user interface is concerned, and the applications are querying the screen to find out what size screen I have. Not how many pixels I have, but what size screen I have, like 2 inches by 2 inches. And the applications themselves are actually transforming the way that they work based on the screen they have. So I don't know if anyone here has played with the Office 12 betas. This was what will be Office 2007. When you shrink down Outlook, if you shrink down Outlook today, you know, like the columns get thinner and the buttons start vanishing off your toolbar. It's the same Outlook interface. It just like shrinks it down. Well, in Office 12, when you shrink down Outlook and you like make Outlook so it's only 2 inches by 2 inches square, it looks damn similar to Pocket Outlook from that's based into Windows CE, because the application is written to understand this new interface. And I should say this is like something you get when you're running on Vista with the whole new WinFX interface. It's written to recognize I've been reduced to a 2x2-inch window, so I should change the icons that I show. So it gets rid of my folders, gets rid of my preview, puts just messages and just some like very basic reply, new, you know, calendar, that kind of stuff. And so the applications can be smarter themselves. So now this ties into this whole flow kind of thing. So maybe I've got my applications running on my WinFX desktop here, and Microsoft is sending me down just the WinFX primitives, and I'm rendering them locally. And then I use my smooth roaming and roam my application, flow it over to this device here, and the same app just kind of becomes Pocket Outlook-like. Now, maybe this device cannot support rendering that kind of stuff locally, so it still is rendered on the server and scraped on the server, but sending me down 240 by 240 pixels that are appropriate for the size instead of sending it down something that would be the raw primitives. So what we're seeing is that the applications are getting to be smarter and smarter about the not just the interface, but the parameters and properties of the devices on which they're running and being presented to the users. And Citrix is in a perfect position to take advantage of that. So getting back to the whole point about like NetScaler and Taros and all this kind of stuff, you know, as applications become more and more kind of webified, and I don't mean webified like the user interface is HTML, I mean still good old-fashioned Windows interfaces, but the back-end data is all these web services and the back-end, that kind of stuff, now the NetScaler acquisition by Citrix becomes a lot more interesting because it definitely affects what we are doing in the sort of traditional application space, not just affecting what the people are doing three cubicles over for the web side of things. Long answer to a short question, huh? Interestingly, did anyone catch that Citrix bought another company this past week? So Citrix bought a company called Reflectant, spelled not the way you'd think that the word would be spelled. And so this company called Reflectant is an application performance management vendor. So they make application performance or management monitoring, whatever. They make application performance monitoring and management products. A lot of people, when Citrix first announced that they bought Reflectant, they said, oh, this is like RM. And in fact, APM, Application Performance Monitoring, and Resource Management, black and white differences, and day and night, whatever. So the thing is this, is that I got a friend, Kevin Goodman, works for RTO Software. Kevin's actually the guy that wrote that DLL rebasing stuff that Joe was talking about that on your presentation server version 4. He talks about, he's got a term I love called YAM. Y-A-M. YAM stands for Yet Another Monitor. Because any jackass can write a program that is going to monitor performance counters on your server. What I mean by that is there's so many companies that are out there that are, they monitor perfine counters, they set alerts, it's yellow, it's green, it's red, it's paging you, it's emailing. Big deal, right? So you're at lunch and you get the pager alert that says context switches per second have gone above 200,000. On server 4. And you're like, do I finish my lunch or do I go back to the office? I don't know. Well, what do you do? Cell phone, call your buddy back in the office, say, hey, is anyone complaining about server 4? No? Okay, fine, I finished my lunch. Versus if you call back and say, like, yeah, no one can connect to it, then we gotta get it fixed right away, then you drop your sandwich and you go home. But what's interesting is, how did you make the decision to go home? You did not make that decision based on a performance monitor counter. You based it on, like, is anyone calling the help desk or not? So what's interesting, like resource management from Citrix is a great product for being a YAM. And nothing against YAMs, because it's not their fault. And YAMs were cool like 10 years ago, right? But now, like, again, if all these alerts are going off and CPU, I mean, does high CPU usage, is that bad? This is, I say no. I laugh at that drawing, that graph that Citrix has with that fair share thing. That's crap. I want my CPU to be 100% at all times. Because if my users have enough workload where it requires 70% of the CPU, and I'm limiting them to 50%, shame on me. Because I'm taking all this, that everything above that line is money flushed down the drain. You're not getting those cycles back. So it's like I'm actually slowing down the performance of users just to maybe allow for more headroom for the future users that might come onto the box. So I think that a much better indication of CPU utilization is to look at the work queue, is the process queue, like to see how many jobs are built up in waiting in line for the CPU, not to see how busy it is. Perfect example of this, you can show the naysayers at home, fire up calculator. Type in like 8 random numbers and hit that factorial button, which is N exclamation mark. There is not enough time in the end of humanity for that transaction to finish. What's going to happen? You're just going to spike your CPU at 100%. Once you do that, do it on your laptop. Go ahead and start using your applications. Open up Word, open up Excel, send an email, run this, run that, get online. You would never even know that your CPU is spiked at 100%, apart from the scaldings of the hairs on your legs, if it's your laptop, right? But there's no way. The system is going to perform fine. Why? Because calculators is a well-behaved application and will step out of the way when someone else needs a CPU. It's going to take as much as it's there. It figures instead of the system doing nothing, it's going to take as much as it needs. But again, that's a great example of high CPU does not equal bad. Bad user experience equals bad. And the thing is, performance counters do not relate to bad user experience. And so all these YAMs out there, for years, I've never used them because they give me the wrong data. They're not giving me data that I can use to actually do my job better. Now, if the users complain, then it's good to look in the YAMs and see, okay, well, is there causality between the linkage and the user complaining, that kind of stuff. But this is a tool you use after a user has complained. This is not a tool that you use to tell you that users might be complaining. So, what's my point? Getting back to Reflectant, this company that Citrix bought. First of all, we knew Citrix was buying some company in this space. Why? iForum 2004. How many APM vendors were there? Application performance monitoring. How many APM vendors were at iForum 2004? I'll give you one guess. It starts with a zero. Mm-hmm. All right. iForum 2005, 13 APM vendors. And you, if you heard my podcast that I gave from iForum, you'll hear me talking about, like, what the hell is an APM vendor? And why is there 13 of them here? And so I went around to all these people and talked to them, including Reflectant, actually, about what they were doing and how their products work and all this kind of stuff. What these APM products do is they monitor the user experience, not the server performance metrics. So for example, what some of these vendors do is they can actually hook into applications. And you can say, as a user, as an administrator, what you want to watch. So you can say, I want to watch a user clicking the new mail functionality in Outlook. I want to see how long it takes them to click that until the new mailbox pops up. Or I want to see transactions within SAP when they click OK on new record until the next screen pops up, or whatever. And the way these tools work usually is they don't even need to have, like, you don't need like ghost script sessions running or anything like that. They'll actually look at the real window handles being created and everything within current sessions. And basically, I want to know when a user clicks new within Outlook, how long does it take for that mail message to come up? And I want to watch that. I don't care what the number is, whatever, a second, 2 seconds, half a second, I don't care. But if that like doubles or quadruples in time, now I want to know about that. And guess what? If the performance monitor metrics on the server are perfect, I still want to know. Because I don't care at all what the performance monitor metrics are saying, I want to know if the application is slowing down on that environment. Some of these products actually will even track stuff from the client side. This is one thing of the things that Reflectant does. Reflectant has a client agent. So they've got a DLL that sits in the client and snaps in to the ICA client software, just like, you know, ThinPrint or Tricera or AppSense or whatever. And so they'll collect metrics, performance metrics from the client device, and they will also watch the whole experience in the client, including the network. So now you can see, and so Reflectant can give you alerts that says, hey, these four clients right here, Outlook turned really bad for them suddenly. And again, it's not basing this purely just on performance counters. It's basing this on, looking at the application, how the application is working. And then you can dig into the performance counters. And then you can see, interesting, Kazaa.exe is taking up 99.9% of the processor on this client device. Huh. So you get visibility in that's more intelligent than purely looking at server metrics. Now, this is the kind of things that the APMs do. As I said, we knew Citrix was buying one because 0 in 2004, 13 in 2005. So, like, they're not going to let that sit because we know Citrix, like, they build it or buy it if it's something that kind of even hovers anywhere near their space. With Reflectant, so Citrix buys Reflectant. Reflectant, by the way, pricing starts at $50,000. 50,000. Like, eye-popping. Until you recognize that's what's par for this space. So, like, it freaks us out as presentation server people, but that's, like, pretty right on for the whole APM space. But this is also the reason why Citrix, it's not like Citrix is going to be adding Reflectant technology into RM version 5, because it's, they're not doing that. What Citrix did with Reflectant, Reflectant's up in Boston, they got 31 employees, and they're going to keep them up there in Boston for now. But what Citrix is doing is they made them their own division within Citrix. So I told you that Citrix right now has, well, there's a few primary divisions. Like, there's Citrix Online, which is the GoToMeeting, GoToMyPC, so there's the online division. There's the Application Management Division, which is Presentation Server and Advanced Access Control and this kind of stuff. There's the Application Networking Division, which is their Access Gateway and NetScaler and Taros and these kinds of things. So management, network, online, and now a fourth division they created, which is the Systems Management Group, or they call these groups. So so they actually made Reflectant. They didn't pull Reflectant into the Presentation Server group. Management group. They call it, it is its own SMG, system management group. So it's the Citrix Systems Management Group. Who cares what group is called, right? Like, why is this interesting to me? I think it's interesting because it shows that Citrix is thinking about Reflectant in a much larger way than just plain presentation server. Because Citrix, you know, so they have this NetScaler stuff, which can accelerate web applications and do all this kind of thing. You could use Reflectant on the NetScaler stuff as well. Maybe you have Reflectant on a back-end web server and some client agents. Like, they've got a Java JavaScript clients that can run with Reflectant. And so maybe you can actually watch the experience of users using your application, and maybe you can use that to then control your NetScaler load balancing or the NetScaler caching or things like that. So, and I mean, it's obvious what Reflectant can do for us in the presentation server space. My point is it also has legs in the web application space. And then, of course, Citrix is also working on this Tarpon thing. I won't go too much into Tarpon unless you want to, but basically, as Joe said, you know, Citrix is getting into what they call the streaming, application streaming environment, where they can actually, you build the applications into these isolation environments, and then you can drop these applications on clients, I mean actual Windows XP workstations, in addition to your presentation servers. So Citrix is saying that's going to help users for offline access and all this kind of stuff. Well, I mean, it should be very obvious that Reflectant plays into that very, very well as well. So I think the purchase of Reflectant by Citrix is a really good purchase. I had not yet, well, before Monday, used Reflectant software. I talked to them in iForum, but I talked to them plus the 12 other APM vendors who were there. And so, you know, this is news to me also when they bought them. And so I kind of, you know, got Reflectant and got the, you know, I mean, read all the material, got the demo and sort of started playing with it and see how it worked. And I realized after playing with it, like, wow, this is cool, but it can be cool for Citrix across the board. So again, this is the kind of thing, if you look in the direction where Citrix is moving, this is what kind of takes them beyond also just the, like, kind of tit-for-tat competition with Microsoft and getting into where they're adding value across the board regardless of the applications that you're bringing online. Questions? Thoughts? Yeah, right. 16 people all at once check their watches.
Yeah. Can you just touch for couple seconds 64-bit platform and talk just a little bit about that and some of your experience with that?
And by the way, if anyone walks out, I promise you I will not be offended, so just take off whenever you need to. 64-bit. Okay. Couple quick things in this. First of all, you know, 64-bit Windows has been around for a long time. Since 2002, maybe, on the HP Itanium platform. Now, that product is essentially a dead product. You know, Intel and HP made this Itanium processor, and AMD made this 32-64 hybrid processor that was so badass that Intel threw out all their Itanium plans and went forth building these hybrid processors also. So these are called X64. So a lot of people use the term 64-bit and X64 interchangeably, but technically we're talking about the X64 platform. What's cool with these X64 processors is, first of all, they've been on the market for a couple years now. So all the new servers you're buying are capable of running these 64-bit stuff. Any AMD Opteron server. And for Intel, almost anything in the past couple of years, go to Intel's website, you can download that processor identification utility, and it'll tell you if you can use 64-bit OS on this. So these hybrid processors, these computers that are running your 32-bit Windows today, you can also install the x64 version of Windows on there. And if you do that, I mean, no new hardware, no nothing. And the x64 version of Windows will run 32-bit applications at full speed. Now, you're going to require about 1.5 times as much memory for each application. But speed-wise, though, full speed. So you can go to this today. And there's a lot of caveats because, like, there's no 16-bit subsystem in x64, so you got to make sure your applications don't have, like, 16-bit installers. And, you know, still are some issues around that, making sure you've got the 64-bit drivers for all your network cards and that kind of stuff. But x64 is here today. Windows, when Microsoft released Service Pack 1 for Windows 2003, they released a version of Windows 2003 that runs on x64. So when you download Windows 2003 ISO from Microsoft, you get the 32-bit or the x64. It's your choice. Citrix, then, last October, so now we're 7 months ago, released a version of Presentation Server that also runs on x64 Windows. So know how when you buy a Presentation Server from Citrix, you don't buy like the Windows 2000 versus 2003 version. You buy Presentation Server, you know, Enterprise for this date, for subscription advantage, that's it. And then your My Citrix account has access to download either the 2000 or 2003 ISO. Well, now it just means magically appeared as a new option, which is the 2003 x64 ISO. So you can download and run 64-bit Citrix today, no problem. Why would you want to do this? Quite frankly, it has to do with scalability. If your servers are all probably what most people are, you're either on blades or you're on 1U, dual processor, 4 gigs of RAM, like DL360s or 1850s or, you know, whatever it's going to be. If you've got all these like pizza box servers in your environment, today there is zero value in going to 64-bit. It's too cutting edge, don't worry about it, you're not going to get any more uses on the box, and you're actually going to increase the memory footprint, because it says about 1.5 times the memory is required for each application that runs. So you got to add more memory in these boxes just to get to the same point where you were, and the problem is that these Windows boxes, you know, you hit hardware limits probably before you hit like architectural core limits on the boxes anyway, so it's not worth it. What's interesting though, I don't know if anyone's ever done any work with building big Citrix servers, 4-processor, 8-processor, things like this. Citrix just flat out does not scale that large. And that in itself is a whole other 3-hour conversation about the kernel memory and the limitations of that and everything and the limitations of a 32-bit memory address space. Well, Microsoft's x64 edition of Windows 2003 uses a 46-bit memory address. So 32-bit Windows uses a 32-bit or a 36-bit memory address, depending on whether you have PIE or not. But the max memory you can have in a 32-bit Windows OS is 64 gigs of RAM. But of course, even with that 64 gigs of RAM, you still only have 2 gigs of kernel memory. So it's great for a database that can shove all of its database in the 60-odd gigs of memory. But terminal server, these interactive users rely so much on kernel memory, you can't put more than 2 or 250 users on a Citrix server, even if you have 16 processors and 64 gigs of RAM. But 64-bit Windows, or I should say x64 Windows, as I said, moves to a 46-bit memory address. So that's like, 10 extra bits. So that's 1,000 times 64 gigabits. What's that?
It's like 3 terabytes.
It's ginormous, is the bottom line. More importantly, the kernel memory error, because we don't care about that, because we can go big in 32-bit today. It's that 2 gigabyte kernel memory. That even with 64 gigs of RAM in a 32-bit box, we still only have 2 gigs of kernel memory to share for all of our users. In the x64 version of Windows, you have 256 gigabytes of kernel memory. So what was that artificial bottleneck previously is now removed. So now you can build one single server that has 16 processors and 120 gigs of RAM and supports 3,000 concurrent Citrix users on one box. Now, I'm not saying you want to do that, because obviously if that fails, you got a higher user affected. But you know what, though? If I have 10,000 users in my environment, you know, do I want to put 70 users on all these pizza boxes? Or do I want to build some like 2U, you know, quad dual core with maybe 16 gigs of RAM and put 600 users per box? And that becomes very, very compelling at that point. Very compelling. So that's where 64-bit is going to play. Now, I should say, in 64-bit world, the that 256 gigs of kernel memory is not our bottleneck. We're going to hit whatever the next bottleneck is. Like now, disk access. If you're if you're talking about, you know, 700 uses on a box, this ain't your like, you know, dual RAID, you know, RAID 1 mirrored 10K drives, you know? Yeah, so what you're doing is like, if you look, all the vendors are going towards those 2-inch SAS drives, those serial type SCSI, and like even like the new Dell boxes that have like these I mean, we'll have them out with Dell's coming out with and everything. So you can, these two U boxes, you can fit like 8 or 10 drives in there. And so you're going to want to use like a RAID 10 or something like that, where you're actually taking your requests and striping them across all these drives. So these little tiny, they're putting the little 2-inch, they're only 10K drives, but again, if you stripe that across everything, you know, that bus is plenty fast enough to handle that. My point is, so you're going to hit more kind of architectural limits to work through. But I wouldn't get into 64-bit until really I was, you know, building big user loads. But if someone came to me today and I was architecting a, you know, I'd say 4,000 or 5,000 plus users for Citrix, no doubt I'd be looking at 64-bits. Because 64-bit Windows, as I said, has been out for a year. So a year ago it sucked. Because you install 64-bit Windows, there's no 64-bit management software, no 64-bit network, you know, teaming drivers, no 64-bit blah, blah, blah. But for the most part, that's all available now. And pretty much everything you need in 64-bit is great. I wanted to start using 64-bit on my laptop and play with it there. One particular product not available, Citrix Access Gateway Client, 32-bit only. So back to the drawing board with that. But it, you know, it's real enough today to start being used in these kinds of scenarios. And as I said, certainly, I mean, Citrix had, you know, rewrote enough of theirs to work. So everything that they had to rewrite for x64 was rewritten for x64. No cost difference. It's just you buy the user licenses and you, servers, you build 32-bit 2000, 32-bit 2003, or x64 2003, whatever you want's fine.
You do use a different CPU.
Yeah, right.
What's that?
You just use a different CPU.
That's it, exactly. And now VMware too, because like the newest computers, what's cool, right, with you can like actually virtualize 64-bit. So if you want to start playing with it, I mean, you know, VMware supports that. If you have you need the newest Intel CPUs with that virtualization technology on them, and then you can virtualize 64-bit VMs inside 32-bit host OSs, which is sweet.
That's what
I'm
trying to do. I'm virtualizing 32-bit.
Well. And that's one of the things too. And it depends on what your drivers are, because some people are looking at now virtualizing all 32-bit OSs and having 32-bit where you need it, having 64-bit as your host, and running that natively for some, and having 32 as some. So, there's a lot of options for us now. Other questions? Guess that's it. So, if you have any questions about anything you heard, feel free to stop by afterwards. But I really thank everyone for coming today.
Today's show is copyright 2006 by McBride & Madden Company. Thank you for listening.